Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us on the program as we come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m. We rebroadcast again on Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We are streaming live at richarddugan.com, and we archive the radio programs at, believe it or not, richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. So we encourage you to go to the website that we link to of our guests to get more information about what they are talking about, what we've been talking about throughout the hour. I also encourage you to listen to the archive because, and I can't tell you which ones, and I don't have them marked. I did that intentionally. Some of these interviews go a lot longer than the radio show that you listen to. Sometimes we talk for over an hour. I've had one that's gone an hour and a half. So if you really want to hear more of what we've been talking about, listen to what I like to call the afterview. The afterview is just that. What you heard on the radio program is only a part, in some cases maybe only half, of the entire interview with respective guests. And today is probably not going to be any exception to that rule. I'm pleased to welcome back to our program Roberta Grimes. She is an author who has provided us with a lot to talk about, especially with one of my favorite subjects, death and dying. She is a business attorney, so I better watch out, who has two extraordinary experiences of light in childhood at that prompted her to spend decades studying nearly 200 years of abundance, 200 years, if I'm reading this correctly, of abundance and consistent communication from the dead, which is going to be very interesting. And I know that you, Roberta, are familiar also with another series of books that I have copies of in my home, having to do with and I believe the title, it's a 5-book series, and I can't think of the author's name now. All of a sudden, it just flat out escapes me. But having to do with Spalding, that's the name, Spalding. And I think it's Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East. I think that was the name of it. It was a 5-part series, and there was a passage in there where these people are traveling all over the world, and they come to this cave. And they actually get a chance to meet and experience Jesus and Pontius Pilate and some others. And what really struck me, Roberta, and of course, welcome to our program. It's great to have you with us.
I'm so glad to be here.
What really struck me in that conversation that they had in this book, in this particular, I forget which part it was, which volume, was the fact that Jesus had an interesting comment to make. And it was like, and my heart really went out to him at that point. He said words to the effect, I paraphrase, that I can't get close to human beings because they have so deified me. They've so put me up on such a high pedestal that I can't relate to them. It's not that he can't relate to humans. It's that he's not able to because the humans have gone way beyond anthropomorphizing this character of history, bigger than life. God. And that breaks his heart because he wants to be able to come down and commune and relate and if I can put it in this context, Roberta, and party, have a good time, if you will.
Party.
have some joy in one's life. There's no place in the New Testament where I can find places where Jesus expressed certain emotions of anger. He cried. He was sorrowful. Maybe experienced joy, but I never read anywhere where he laughed.
We have to understand a number of things. And first, let me just say that just to clarify my background, I have spent my whole life studying afterlife evidence, not near-death experiences, because those are not related to death. They are a different phenomenon. But completed deaths. I've read many hundreds of communications from people who were dead, the best of which were received, actually, before 1950, and studied. I've also studied related aspects of mainstream science, which the scientists themselves don't understand is directly related to what happens at and after death. So that's when I wrote The Fun of Dying, when I had it figured out. And I'm not the only one. There are many people now who have done essentially the same investigation and come to all the same conclusions. But the most important thing that I feel I have discovered in my whole life is that Jesus in the Gospels told us 2,000 years ago things about God, reality, death, the afterlife, and the meaning and purpose of our lives that we could not have learned in any other way until the 20th and in some cases the 21st century. Isn't that amazing? We can validate the historical Jesus now and that he knew what he was talking about, and he, in fact, validates the afterlife evidence. So to me, that's pretty exciting. And then we go from there, Richard, into talking about, well, then who was he really, and what was he really? Why did he really come? Mm-hmm. Which is another thing which a tremendous amount of light comes from the afterlife evidence toward understanding the true meaning and message of Jesus' life.
Well, we're talking, of course, about your latest work, Liberating Jesus, which I thought a very interesting title. I thought, I didn't realize he needed liberating. Is he being held captive somewhere? Yes, is he being held captive somewhere? But yet the argument or the statement has often been made. I've heard this many times, primarily of spiritual people who are not necessarily Christians. And they will say that if Jesus came back today, not even the Christians would recognize him. They wouldn't even know him, because what he would be teaching would be so foreign to the modern day, quote unquote, orthodoxy.
Of course.
That it's like, and I find it fascinating, and not to get too far afield here, but I find it fascinating the various rules. Now, of course, we're sort of all guilty of this, of picking and choosing what we want to believe. But my understanding from my years in seminary, and I say that tongue-in-cheek because I worked for 15 years at a Christian radio station.
Did you really?
I did. And it was the greatest education I was ever paid for. And what was so fascinating about it was that I would sit and listen to a lot of these ministers and pastors and so forth talking about all of these different conditions in our social world that were abhorrent to God, but they were getting them from the Old Testament.
That's right.
And everything that I've read from the Old Testament about, for example, the Messiah, the Christ who came and is spoken of in the New Testament, that he came to fulfill the law. So now the old laws of the Old Testament are null and void because they're all summed up in, of course, the golden rule, you know, love your neighbor as yourself.
Jesus and says this right in the Gospel.
He does.
People don't listen to him.
And
exactly
so,
right.
And so then when I hear these people talking about all of the social ills of the world and how abhorrent they are, and then they go to the Old Testament, and I'm going, wait a minute, you've pointed out one law, but you've got 612 other laws that you're ignoring. You can't take one without taking them all. And let me tell you something.
Right.
And if you do take them all, you're going to live a very strange life.
You'll have to kill every one of your friends who violates the Sabbath.
Yeah.
The rule.
I mean, that's one of the rules.
There are many rules like that they just make you cringe.
Sure. But now, those were for the old covenant. But now and this is interesting, and I want to share this with you real quickly here. I want you to kind of dive into here. I had the great pleasure of interviewing a born-again Christian. Now, granted, I realize this is not quite, because you made a good differentiation. He intentionally experienced out-of-body experiences. Different from what we're talking about, but my point is this. I couldn't find anywhere in the Old or New Testament for the validation of that experience. And yet here is a man who believes in Jesus, who follows the basic tenets, if you will, of the Bible, and yet is having these experiences. And everything that I learned in my seminary, they always told me that if it isn't spoken about in the Bible, we don't talk about it. You know, where in other words, where the Bible speaks, we speak, and where the Bible is silent, we're silent. And I thought, okay, so you're going to invalidate experiences of people left and right and basically say that they're insane or they're crazy or they're of the devil or what have you, instead of acknowledging that, yeah, I died and came back and so on and so forth. But let's talk a little bit about that. What about your background in that in this regard?
Well, I'm a very, have been my whole life a very zealous Christian. I mean, I was spoken to twice out of a flashing light and in my my bedroom, which is the same experience that Moses had with his burning bush that was not consumed. It was what happened to Saul on the road when he was converted to the Apostle Paul, bright light and voice. I had that happen to me twice before I was 20 years old. So I've been the world's most zealous Christian. I majored in early Christian history in college. I was a zealous, ardent Protestant. And then when I married a Catholic, I figured Christian is Christian. I became the most zealous possible Catholic. I raised my children Catholic. I was a lector for many years and taught Sunday school. There's nobody who has you know, basically had more cards punched as a Christian than I have. Mm-hmm. So I felt led and really compelled to... Oh, and also I've read the Bible repeatedly. I probably have read it 7 or 8 times cover to cover and the New Testament twice as many times because I would read the whole thing, then I would go back and start just for the New Testament and then go back to Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
So I know this stuff cold.
Yeah.
And there I was doing this research, and in my 50s, I finally, early 50s, I had to realize that no matter how I looked for it, I could find no evidence that the teachings of modern Christianity have any basis in what I would call fact. There is no evidence that God has ever judged a single human being, and we learn a lot about judgment from the dead, and they tell us God never takes a human body, God never judges, God this, God that, totally different from what I had learned as a Christian. There's no evidence that God ever needed a sacrifice. And when you think about it, what a barbaric idea that is, that God's loving, but not so much until he gets to watch his son being murdered. That's a crazy idea.
Yeah.
And we know where it came from. It came from first century Judaism, because they were still, you know, sacrificing pigeons in the temple. We know that because Jesus had to clear the money changers out once when he got fed up with them. And so what we had then was a disaster. The teacher, the Messiah, was killed. How do we explain that? Well, Paul explained it because he was a first century Jew. He explained it using first century theology, and it made perfect sense then. It just does not make any sense now. And yet we our whole idea is that people should not advance past the first century AD in their spiritual growth. That to me is appalling all by itself, because our minds, we now know, are part of the infinitely perfect eternal mind of God. Your mind is part of God.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus said that, but this is something Christians don't know about because they're stuck in the first century. So okay, I got to the point finally where I could not find any evidence. There's no hell, and certainly nobody condemned to hell, but there is an outer darkness, which Jesus talked about. A lot of things he talked about, but Christianity ignores. But in the end, I came to understand that Jesus is right about everything. Jesus is a true, eternal being. But the rest of the Bible, the whole Old Testament, Jesus said, you're absolutely right. He said, get rid of it. Someone said to him, you know, have you come to destroy the law and the prophets, which is what they called the Old Testament? He said, no, I've not come to destroy it. I've come to fulfill it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what did he mean by that? Well, different day, someone said, so what's the most important commandment, teacher? They called him teacher, which is what we should be calling him today.
Mm-hmm.
What's the most important commandment? And Jesus didn't name any of the 10. He said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said something important people ignore. He said, in that consists all the law and the prophets. So with those, with what you quoted, you know, he's saying that he came to fulfill the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we add what he also said about what the most important commands are, we understand what Jesus really came to do, 2,000 years ago, and he says it throughout the Gospels. He came to replace the whole Old Testament and all those old rules and the whole Ten Commandments and everything with God's law of love. That's all we are supposed to be following, is the law of love. When you understand that, it's all so simple.
Yeah. And I theorized, you referred to Jesus being sacrificed and the reasons thereof. I remember hearing different sermons throughout this period and before and after. Certain ones, every once in a while I would hear that, man is nothing more than a lowly worm. He's just, he's just awful, right? And I thought, well, wait a minute. Okay. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. And if that's the case, then man, which God also created, had to have some value. Otherwise, what would have been the point? If man had no value, then why would God bother? Well, this is the valueless thing. Forget it. We'll just, smash it all down and we'll just start over again. And it didn't do that. Now, this is, again, accepting the theology in that regard.
And the thing is, you're right, that Christian theology, this false belief system, makes us, lowly and fallen and all these negative things.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus did away with that.
Yeah.
He brought us this law of perfect love. And he tried to teach us that God is spirit. God, directly relates to us. We don't need. I think there's good evidence he came to abolish even Judaism and to teach all people to relate to God directly, because we are part of God. Therefore, that's a natural relationship. I'll tell you something, too. He came to teach us to learn lovingly, learn how to love perfectly, and to forgive completely. Nobody takes that seriously. It's like, well, maybe you have to love, but, there's some people you just can't love. But that's okay, because Jesus died for my sins, so God's going to let me into heaven. Every bit of that is bogus. Jesus talked to us about spiritual growth. The dead tell us the same thing. You're here to learn and grow spiritually.
Mm.
And the teachings of Jesus in the Gospels, I can attest to you, are the easiest way you could possibly do it. Learning to love and forgive using those gospel teachings is simple.
My
next book is going to be about that. It's going to be called The Fun of Growing Forever.
I love that. The Fun of Growing Forever. And the thing is that, there's another passage that speaks to not fearing the one who can destroy the body, but the one who can destroy the soul. And I don't know who that would be, but the point is that there's more value, there's more permanence in the soul than there is in the body. I love to use the analogy with people. I start out by asking the question. So tell me about how many cars you've owned in your lifetime. You started probably at 16, right? How many cars? And what was the point of each of those cars? And I mean really down to brass tacks. What was the point? It wasn't to get girls or cruise the main street. It was to get from point A to point B, right? And you went through 5, 6, 7, 8 cars, whatever. Well, consider your body as just a vehicle. Now,
right.
As a kid, I used to walk around thinking, I am inside this thing, looking through these eyes at the rest of the world. Now, I also thought I was the only one who was like this. In other words, this world is here for me. This is my world, and this is how I see it. So I inhabit this physical vehicle. I inhabit it, but it's not permanent. I will get a new one somewhere along the way, whether that implies reincarnation, or I won't need one, because the body that my essence is, if I can put it, because I don't think that there's a physical material existence to us, i.e. spirit, spiritual things. It's kind of like the air, and that's another thing that somebody was raising an interesting point. They said that nobody questions the aspect of believing in something that you don't see. And yet here we are, we're all breathing the air, but we don't see it. And yet we just do it without even thinking. So all of these things, they come rushing into my mind, all of these different things that came to me as I was growing through that process, and even to this day, and wondering, as I know a lot of people that are at my age and older, and I'm 55 now, they're starting to now look forward. I mean, it's not that I wasn't to some degree, even in my teens and 20s, as to what's next. You know, what do I do now? I mean, you know, I've lived what's considered to be half my life. I've got another half to go, but then what? And I'm hearing about family and friends and other people that pass on. And my thoughts go to, what are they experiencing now? In a manner of speaking, Roberta, I kind of envy them because I wonder what they're doing.
Oh, it's possible to know in quite detail. That we have so many good communications from the dead. I now have an active consultant on the sixth level, which is almost as high as the source. And we know in detail what's going on. We're trying to help people to understand it and even better to find it for themselves. But the one thing that we have learned that I think is probably most important to communicate now is that we do know the meaning and purpose of human life. There's no question about it.
Can you share that with us?
Yes. We are here to learn and grow spiritually. We're here to become more and more elevated in our spiritual aspect. And the most powerful positive spiritual energy is love. The more loving we become, the higher is our vibratory rate. Now, after you graduate and you go to the afterlife levels, there are about seven primary levels, and the lowest one that you'd even want to be in, where most people actually end up, is level 3. And it's beautiful. It's like the earth. There's a lot to do. It's fun. But above it are levels 4 and 5, where it's better and better. And level 6, which, I mean, if you would like to have one continuous emotional orgasm forever, get to level 6. It's the most joyous place you can possibly be. And all of that is available to us. Jesus called level 6 of the kingdom of heaven. To get there, though, we have to grow spiritually. He talked about that. Jesus told us everything we need to know. A lot of people who are Westerners are going to Eastern religions and trying to follow them.
I've noticed that.
I can't meditate. I can't do yoga. I can't chant. I can't do any blessed thing. But what I've learned is you don't need to do any of that because your mind is already perfect. You've forgotten that it is. Hmm. What the teachings of Jesus do and do beautifully and do quickly is to remind you of who and what you are. So it's easy to follow those teachings, and it's easy to allow them to transform your life. And that's what makes it especially tragic that Christians think there's a shortcut, which there is not. The only shortcut there is right there in your Gospels.
Now, here's an interesting one to throw at you. As I was going through my seminary work, I just started calling it that. That's interesting. As I was going through that process, and of course taking in and gleaning what I could and so forth, I started to formulate some ideas that were certainly contrary to what I was hearing, because what I was hearing didn't make any sense. Now, words are very powerful, and I don't know about you, Roberta, but from my reading of specifically the New Testament, and I've read the Bible through maybe once or twice from cover to cover, mm-hmm. And then, of course, the New Testament more often. I've got, as a matter of fact, the first Bible I was ever given was through this radio station. It was through a minister by the name of Harley Howard. I don't even know if the man is still alive. I have marked that thing up. I still have it, but I have highlighted all over the place, underlined and so on and so forth, things that I had questions about that were important to me and so forth. But what I found to be so interesting was an author that I had the privilege of interviewing a couple of times who wrote a book called The Apocalypse Conspiracy, kind of like what you're talking about here. And he said that, and he was a Bible-believing Christian as well. But one of the things that he did was he began to go through and define words. And I wanted to make his information mine. So I did my own study. So I put my Bible next to my concordance, my Strong's Concordance. And of course, for the sake of argument, we will say that, okay, both books are valid. Okay, the information in both is valid. And one passage he popped up with was what's called a rapture passage. Mm-hmm. They shall be caught up to meet him in the air in the clouds of glory. Focused on the word air. And in the concordance, in that passage, there are two definitions that could have been used. One is the atmosphere. The clouds float through it, the birds fly through it, and so forth. The other is akin to the same definition of God breathing the breath of life into the nostrils of Adam. And the irony was, it was the second definition that is used in that passage of the New Testament that, along with other things that he researched, showed him that the Christian life was an internal process.
Yes, it is.
Totally.
Totally.
And he also found that there is no reference in the New Testament to the second, number two, coming, but that it refers to Christ returning, but doesn't say how many times.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the whole of Revelation is absolutely valueless. The ravings of a madman. Jesus is, there is no way, given what Jesus tells us in the Gospels, that there is going to be as you say, a rapture, but then
Armageddon and all of that.
Oh, my Lord, there's no way that's going to happen.
Well,
Jesus is the Prince of Peace.
Right.
And what Jesus did in the Gospels was to tell us, look, you need to learn to grow spiritually. If you don't grow forward, you go back. And there are a number of good parables about this, which a lot of people don't understand.
Yeah.
Jesus says those who have will be given more. To those who don't have, even the little bit they think they have is going to be taken away. That's not money. That's spiritual growth he's talking about.
Yeah.
And it's our job to bring the kingdom of God on earth. It is not. I mean, Jesus gave us our tools. They're
mm-hmm.
right there in the Gospels.
Yeah.
In the second line of the Lord's Prayer, we say, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven."
Mm-hmm.
We're praying for the kingdom of God on earth, and it's our job to do it. And it's not even going to be hard.
Yeah.
We just have to use the gospel teachings. They work.
I even used to say to people, after I learned a little bit more about Revelation and all of the scenario of quote-unquote the future, I'd heard about this for so many years, I finally started saying, is there something that I can do to participate in precipitating and speeding up this process so we can get through this Antichrist and Armageddon, and then we get to the 1,000 years of peace? Because I'm really sick and tired of this story. It's really boring. And I'm sorry.
And they all looked at you funny, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. And again, neither of us, I know you don't, and neither do I, we mean no disrespect, but we're trying to understand just like everybody else. But there's so much of what we've been taught, and I was born and raised a Catholic, too. I mean, I was even told, I had a family of Mormons living next to us who I had best friends with, and we played in the yard together, and I even went to church with them one Sunday. And of course, I knew all about the passages referring to the Whore of Babylon. And of course, that was the Catholic Church. And I thought, how interesting. And yet here are two families of diametrically opposed beliefs, supposedly, living side by side in what was considerable harmony. And I thought, there's something wrong with that story on both sides.
The only part of the Bible that we should be considering God's word is the part that actually is God's word.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the words of Jesus on love and forgiveness in the gospel.
Yeah. By the way, would you agree with me that if the people of that day to the present day had gotten it, that the rest of the epistles beyond the book of Acts would not have been needed?
Well, sure. I mean, I believe in that, but what's more important to me is to try to help people understand that it's okay to question whether the parts of the Bible which are abhorrent to modern people, it's okay to question
mm-hmm.
whether those are of God. They're not of God. I mean, that's just the way it is. The only reason we think that the whole Bible is God's word is that the Council of Nicaea in 325 and some lesser councils, the people who were in those councils we're being inspired by God, so whatever we do is going to be God's word. Well, we know that that's not true, because you cannot sit down, as I have done, and read the Bible from Genesis to Revelation and consider it to be the inspired word of a sane and rational God or of a loving God. You can't, because it's full of contradictions.
Yeah.
And a lot of it contradicts the teachings of Jesus. So to consider them to be on a par with the Old Testament and with the rest of the New Testament is obscenity.
Yeah. Roberta Grimes,
if we're Christians, we should... about this, but we should follow Jesus. Doesn't that seem to make sense?
Yeah, and I've even made the comment, too, that if we really were going to be followers of Jesus, we wouldn't be Christians, we'd be Jews.
Well, that's true.
Because he never converted. I don't recall ever converting.
No, in fact, he tried to get people to not to make his teachings into a religion.
Yeah.
He did come to free us from religions, but he literally, people will remember the lines in that he says, don't put old wine into new wineskins or new wine into old. I can't, wine into old wineskins.
New into old,
The new wine is his teachings. The old wineskins are the old Jewish beliefs. If you do, you're going to have the wineskins split. You're going to lose your wine, and you'll make a mess.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what people did. They put his new teachings into the old religion, and that's what we're stuck with now.
Now, it's interesting. You also have the quote on the cover of the book, if you hold to my teachings, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And I want to have you elaborate more on that when we get back from break, but I find that interesting because I had a wonderful conversation with a priest at one point, because I was looking at the historical evidence of crucifixions, and specifically of Jesus' crucifixion. And from what I understand, and I could be wrong here, but from what I was able to find, the final indignation for Jesus of Nazareth on the cross was that he was stripped naked. Not a stitch of clothing. And he hung there on the cross. So I asked the priest, I said, based upon the passage that I just quoted, why is it that we don't have the true representation of Jesus on the cross at his at the utmost of his indignation? And he says, because we don't want to upset the sensibilities of the people. And that just, that blew my mind. First of all, I was grateful that he was willing to address the question honestly. But that was his statement. Yeah. And I thought, well, okay, if that's the case, then there's a lot more that's being, quote unquote, no pun intended, covered up. That we're being denied. And this kind of goes to, you've read the 66 books of the Bible, but have you read the apocryphal writings? And then
my Bible has always been strictly the either New International Version, Revised Standard Version, one of those, the modern Protestant Bible. I even though I became a Catholic, I could never get into the Catholic Bible, so my husband read that, and I read the Protestant one.
Yeah.
But I've literally, for decades, I read it over and over and over again.
Yeah. Well, I've what I found so interesting, and I raised these questions, and people would tell me, no, you need to go read the writings of the founding fathers of the faith, because they asked these questions of themselves. Many of these names I had never heard of before, so I thought, well, wait a minute, does that mean, because I'm querying as well, that I'm kind of in the same league with them. And the other question was, well, wait a minute. Well, who set them up as the arbiters of the faith?
That's right. You're right.
You know?
They did. They set themselves up.
Exactly.
I mean, who could have the arrogance to say, I speak for God? I cannot imagine having that arrogance.
Right. Now, again, before we break here, I do want to reiterate that we are speaking here with Roberta Grimes. She has her latest work out is Liberating Jesus. And again, we do this because we're curious. We ask these questions. We state the things that we're stating because what we have been taught over the decades in our lives didn't make sense. And that if what we say offends, that is not our intent. Our intent is to dialogue about these things and We don't necessarily. I know that, Roberta, you come from more of a position of certainty than I, and I want to get into that certainty when we get back from break. But I think that you would agree with me that we want people to understand. We want people to have the information so that they can decide.
Oh, of course. That's the only reason I have done all this work my whole life long. I needed to know it, but I learned a long time ago what's going on.
Yeah.
Now what I want to do is help as many people as possible come to the same understanding, because Jesus is right. When you know the truth, it truly does set you free. It sets you free from fear, and it sets you free from all the anxiety that we have in our lives, and it makes you just joyous.
It would be a wonderful thing if we could all make that transition, and we'll continue talking more about this, about the liberating of Jesus, the liberation. Liberating Jesus, the title of the book. Roberta Grimes, my guest. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm talking with Roberta Grimes. We're talking about Liberating Jesus, the title of her latest work, and very grateful that she has consented to give us so much time here on the program to talk about these different things. This is, to me, utterly fascinating. I have always enjoyed these kinds of conversations because I learned so much. And I have to also say, too, and, you know, I made the comment earlier about, you know, if we were really going to be followers of Jesus, we would have been Jewish. We would have become Jewish. And I have to say that some of the greatest conversations I have ever had and the most enlightenment I have ever received in my conversations has been with rabbis.
Yeah.
If you do any study whatsoever into what it takes to be a rabbi, to learn these different things, and I'm not saying that everything that is spouted is gospel, but one of the things that, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, the laws, the 613 laws, Jewish laws in the Old Testament, primarily I think in Leviticus.
Yeah.
Well, he shared with me about one in particular, and he said that the problem with the modern day is that they have taken it out of context, which, but geez, there's a surprise. And he began to explain to me, he gave me the background on this particular law, and that the whole point was that if there was an interference with the natural order of things, then the law is broken. Now, and he says that in our day and age, that law is not being broken because the natural order of things is continually perpetuated through the various scientific means at our disposal. Science has created the ways for us to continue to propagate the species and so forth. And when he shared that with me, I thought, that makes a heck of a lot more sense than just to say that I've found love and it's with the person of the same sex.
Oh, this is one of the great tragedies of Christianity.
And that violates then the law of Jesus.
Only to love. And if someone loves someone of an opposite sex, of the same sex, who are we to say that there's anything wrong with them?
Yeah.
I mean, but Christians are so caught up in being selectively judgmental based upon parts of the Old Testament they want to follow. I mean, it's juicy and fun to be able to hound people for their sexual preference, but not so much fun to have to kill people for breaking the Sabbath. So we just do what we want to do. That's horrendous. There is nobody who is hounding people for their sexual behavior, which Jesus is silent on. He doesn't talk about that in the New Testament. It's like, who cares? First, seek God. Then seek your brother. Then, after you are perfect, I think you'll look at people who are homosexual in a very different way.
You know, I've shared this story a number of times. My best friend, he and I went through grade school, high school, and college together. And I remember the day that he came out, and I just looked at him and I said, What do you want me to do with that? Do you expect that to change our relationship? You're my best friend. And I didn't want to say this, but it's like, I don't care. It doesn't matter. You're my best friend. We've been through so much together and so forth. And it's really kind of sad in that respect. I'm curious though, Roberta, obviously you have a very strong, you take a very strong position in terms of what you shared as we went to break, of sharing this information with people, of helping this information to set people free. But the biggest question of all has to do with where you got the information, how you got it, how you came in contact with the sources of this information. Can you enlighten us on that aspect?
There's an appendix, the fifth appendix of Liberating Jesus talks about where the book came from. In point of fact, after decades of doing afterlife research, which anybody can do, it just takes decades, of reading all these many hundreds of communications, looking at how consciousness studies and quantum physics and other aspects of science fit in, and it does all fit perfectly. It's amazing. Only then did I look freshly at what it was very familiar to me, which was Christianity and the Gospels. And it hit me thunderously, but it took decades for it to do it. The whole Christian religion was a sidetrack. It's a first century Jewish sect. That's what it is, and we were never allowed to grow in our beliefs. But the teachings of Jesus are true and eternal. They are perfectly directly from God. So if this is how urgent it is. People are worried about the world. It is falling apart. Mm-hmm. People have said to me, well, whatever you do, you can't do anything about ISIS. Oh, yes, we can. The only thing you can change is yourself. But if enough people will follow strictly the teachings of Jesus, and it may be 10-15% of the population of the world, because our minds are all part of the mind of God, there'll be no more ISIS. All the things we're worried about, there'll never be another war. All of those things, each person listening has the power to transform the world. It is, so you make yourself really happy when you follow the teachings of Jesus. But P.S., isn't that our responsibility to do what we can to transform the world for the better?
Mm-hmm. I came across an interesting book that has just been released, took 10 years to put together. This is addressing what you just commented on. And most of the time, we don't talk about current events on this program. Just because, from my perspective, we know that this stuff goes on. We know that man is being inhuman to man, and I don't need to fill my head with that kind of stuff. But I'm aware of these things. I know this goes on. I'm not putting my head in the sand. But I came across a new book that is being released, has been released, and it's called The Study Quran. And it was written by 10 or 20 scholars. Imams, if you will. The purpose is to put the writing in the proper context, which always, as I said earlier, seems to be the problem. We take stuff out of context. And the thing about it, just like with the Bible, the Quran flows in and out of reality, metaphor, spiritual language, and so on and so forth, right? Now, I haven't read it, but here is a book that's being put out to help to get people to understand the real meaning behind these phrases that are being used, just as, you know, we don't get the real meaning behind the phrases that are being used by a lot of Christians who are very dogmatic in their positions. And again, we've taken passages out of context.
Yes, yes. Or we have just not listened to Jesus. I mean, we have a source of truth.
Yeah.
And the things that Jesus actually says in the Gospels, and not everything in the Gospels is from Jesus. You can tell what he didn't say.
Yeah.
It was added later by the councils.
Yes.
But what he said was eternally true, and that the dead confirm it. And your own life will confirm it, because it doesn't take more than a few months of truly, deeply living the teachings before your whole life is transformed. I am living proof of it. I started doing this in 2011 because when the Fun of Dying first came out, somebody in the audience asked me, because there's an appendix there which talks about the amazing correspondences between the evidence and the teachings of Jesus. And he said, well, do they work? I said, does what work? He said, the teachings, do they work? And I said, oh, I'm sure they do. But then I thought, you know, I got to find out if they work. And I have to tell you that living the Gospels, living the teachings of Jesus on love and forgiveness transforms your life for the better in ways I cannot even begin to describe to you. And it doesn't even take a year. You wouldn't have liked me before, Richard. I wasn't nice in 29. But look at me now. I'm really nice. No, truly, it really is that effective. I'm going to write a whole book about it. It'll come out in 2017.
I'm looking forward to that as well. Yeah, it's interesting. I went to, when I was in seminary, I went through my very pro-Protestant phase, my very pro-Catholic phase. And then I decided that none of that stuff made any sense to me, so I was going to go my own way. And yeah. when I left that radio station, the boss at that time said to me that I was a casualty of Christian radio. And I thought, what a weird thing to say, because I actually had the privilege of being a Baha'i for a year and a half. And studying the writings of their teacher. But one of the great phrases that I took away from that had to do with, it goes basically, and I paraphrase, if you reject one of the messengers of God, you reject them all. And if you accept one of the messengers of God, you accept them all. And when I read that over and over again, it really dawned on me that though I guess you could say that Jesus is maybe are his writings the clearest in that respect?
No question. They're clear, they're simple, and they're very effective.
Yeah.
It's amazing. There are tricks, too, which I've learned and I'm still learning, to make them even more effective. Because what we're talking about here is really taking our everyday lives and using the events in our everyday lives to transform ourselves mm-hmm. by means of those teachings. We shouldn't have to go, live in an ashram or join a convent or do any of those things. We should be able to be living our lives and growing spiritually. That's why Jesus came to teach us. That's what we should be doing.
Yeah. Well,
he's right.
Here's a question for you. There's a passage in the New Testament where Jesus is quoted as saying, he's being questioned by his disciples about some of the miracles that he's doing. And his response to them is, basically, and I paraphrase, don't worry about it. These works that I do, you will do, but greater works than these shall you do. And
that's
I've often wondered, okay, Jesus raised the dead. He turned water into wine. He gave sight to the blind and hearing to the deaf and so on and so forth. And obviously comforted people. I'm not sure what the miracle is in this respect, but in terms of saving the life of the prostitute who was about to be stoned. Let the first of you without sin cast the first stone.
Yeah.
But then I thought, okay, those are pretty neat things, but they all deal with the physical world. What are these greater works that we're supposed to be able to do?
Jesus told us that our minds are part of God and are very, very powerful. It's just that, of course, as I say, we've forgotten that.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll notice whenever Jesus was healing someone, he would say, somewhere a woman touched the hem of his cloak, and he says, someone touched me, I felt the power go out of me. And then when she confessed, sort of humbly and cringing, he said, your faith has healed you. When he was going to heal a blind man, he would say, do you believe I can do this? And the man said, yes. He said, well, but your faith
mm-hmm.
has healed you.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't saying I'm a big shot.
Right.
He was empowering us to use our own minds. And what he was talking about then was the fact that your mind is part of the great eternal mind of God. Therefore, your mind is extremely powerful. It's just that you've forgotten that. Mm-hmm. As you learn again how powerful your mind is, you'll be doing greater miracles than you could imagine.
I've even heard those kinds of contrary comments about the heart of man.
Yes.
And they weren't good things. And I thought, well, that's really strange because the science is now showing the incredible power and value of the heart. It's not just a muscle that pumps blood through our circulatory system.
Yes, it turns out exactly right. And when I say mind, I'm not talking about anything to do with your brain.
Right.
I'm talking about the part of you that is eternal and part
yes.
of the eternal mind of God.
Mm-hmm.
The brain is just a two-way radio in the head of a meat robot.
and
the heart, it's true.
I like that.
And the heart is part of the mind, of your mind, and part of the mind of God. There's very little understanding of a lot of this stuff because scientists have for more than 100 years been dogmatically atheistic, dogmatically materialist. They call it the fundamental dogma of science. That's materialism. Now, they now know that there is no such thing as solid matter.
Mm-hmm.
In 2014, there was actually a little symposium to try to decide, could we still call subatomic particles particles? Because we never found one that was solid. They're all just vortices of energy. They decided they could still call them particles. They were used to the term. But the point is, it's all energy.
Yes.
We think it's solid, but it's not solid. And the afterlife levels, the lower ones especially, are just as solid, but they're not made out of material matter. Why do we have this universe, which is probably between a seventh and a tenth of what we know exists? It's very small, the universe, is compared to what the rest of reality. Why do we have a solid place to come? I think it's because this is our school. We leave most of our awareness behind when we come here, and we come here the way you would go to the gym to learn and to grow spiritually. All those things that you think are bad in your life, whether it's, God forbid, the death of a child or losing a job or, you know, a horrible mother-in-law, whatever those things are, those are like the muscles, the machines in the gym to strengthen your spiritual muscles. That's all. And if we really understood who and what we are, and if we had full access to our minds when we're here, we wouldn't need to try because, you know, you want it to be a sunny day, you'd just think it would be a sunny day. You'd be very, very much more powerful. So that's why we have a playpen or a kindergarten classroom, whatever you want to call it, a place to come where we can't mess with our minds and make things happen automatically.
I'm always intrigued by the spiritual aspect of life. I mean, I've been putting forth this question, and maybe you can provide your answer to this question for us. And as I said before, I know that man has been unkind to himself, to his brethren, to his sisters and his brothers, as long as man's been here. And it seems as though it may be just perception due to our access to information now, especially with the internet. But the question that came up for me about a year or so ago, and I tried to dismiss it, but it won't go away. Does man really deserve to continue on as a species? I mean, it doesn't seem like man has learned squat in thousands of years. He's still fighting. I've even heard the comment that every man who has ever, or woman who has ever fought in the military down through the centuries, they've all died in vain because we're still fighting.
It's all going to change now.
Please tell me when.
Well, no, it's happening at the very highest levels of the greater reality that we enter at death. There is a tremendous effort underway, and it seems to have intensified in 1945 when we used atomic bombs in anger. That effort is being made to raise the consciousness of all of humankind. And it's happening fast. In 2010, when I started talking right after The Fun of Dying came out, I would be talking to groups everywhere, all over the country, and I would see all these blank faces. The questions they asked would be dumb. It was so frustrating. And then a couple of years later, I noticed different day, different people. What had nothing to do with me. They'd be nodding and smiling as I talked. I mean, everybody's beginning to get a clue. And we see it in science now, too. The scientists are much more, just beginning to be much more open to the possibility that there's more than what they can see. It's happening. Given that we have been in this mode of cluelessness and profound spiritual cluelessness for so long, and we've been ignored Jesus 2,000 years ago and continued to ignore him to this day, it's starting to happen now, Richard, and it's going to happen fast. And this effort to help people understand how we are supposed to use the teachings is part of the effort.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all we need are the teachings of Jesus. Whatever your religion is, forget Christianity. Pick up a Bible, read the red letters in the gospel on love and forgiveness in those four gospels, and then live them. It's so easy,
yeah.
And it works so beautifully, and it transforms your life, and it will help to transform the world. So it's going to get better, Richard, I promise you. It will. But I understand why you're despairing.
And I'm not alone. I know that there are a lot of people that are just, I mean, I put it this way. My father, he is 85. I beg your pardon, he'll be 85 this year. And my mother, I think, 82, 83, what have you.
Bless them. Are they in good health?
They are. They are doing well.
Good.
And they've lived a lot longer than I have. And I, at a mere 55, I'm sick and tired of the way things are. Not just the fighting, but the systems that there's a line in a song that what are we building weapons for by John Denver, and there's a line in there that says, for the first time in my life, I feel like a prisoner of the powers that be.
Yeah.
And I'm not alone in that sentiment of his, that there were a lot of us that would rather, we want to thrive. We want to have excitement in our lives and do things that we've never done before. And this whole business of fighting and struggle, I realize that if it bleeds, it leads in the news, is what the phrase is. I've had enough, you know, and I'm only 55.
Well,
you know,
you've had enough, dear. You have the power to change it all. You do. You really do. Everybody listening has the power to change the world, and there is only one way to do it, and that is to transform ourselves. And there's an easy way to transform ourselves, and it's right in the Gospels. Most people own a Bible. I hope it's a red letter Bible with the words of Jesus in red, because frankly, you don't need to read anything but the red letters on love and forgiveness.
Right.
That's it.
Had a good friend by the name of Clyde Freeman. He was a programmer on that station while I was in seminary. And he would only converse with people, because he would invite callers, he would only converse with people on the, this is the way he phrased it, on the Thus Saith the Lord passages. He wouldn't talk to you if you brought up Paul or Peter or James or John, only the Thus Saith the Lord scriptures. So if it was Old Testament.
That's the Old Testament, though.
Well, it's no, but it was also the words of Jesus in the New Testament.
Did he count Jesus? All right.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely did.
Right.
And I liked him because he made a statement to me one day that he says, my mind is closed to the fact that it will remain open to consider possibilities. Because he never said that he had all the answers. He never claimed to have the truth. He was searching that's one of the things he would say, is I'm searching just like everybody else.
Yeah.
And I wish that more of these folks who have these positions of authority and what have you would take the same position, that I don't have the answers either. I'm looking just like everybody else.
It's time to start finding. Jesus said, seek and you will find. Ask and it'll be answered. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who seeks, finds.
Yeah.
For everyone who asks, there are answers. And to him who knocks, the door is opened. He promises that.
Yeah.
And I would take him at his word.
Yeah.
But you can't take the Bible at his word. You just can take the only part of it that Jesus himself blessed, and that is his love, words on love and forgiveness in the gospel.
Right, right. I understand that. Absolutely. Roberta Grimes is my guest, and we're talking about a liberating Jesus and this conversation that we're having. Fascinating conversation, I think, that hopefully will elicit some questions in your own mind that will help you to seek out, you know, answers for yourself. And that's really, I think, Roberta, what it comes down to is that we all have questions. We're all trying to find our way in this world. And, you know, and sometimes it's hard because we listen to others. We read others' materials and so forth, but we have to go inside and, I think, determine for ourselves what resonates with us. That's one of the things that we talk about on this program is we place a smorgasbord for folks. We place it out there every program. And you come and you take what you feel. If it resonates with you, great. Take it and run with it. If you're not sure, check it out. That's why we provide the links to the websites. For example, your website is robertagrimes.com. That's robertagrimes.com. And we encourage you to get further information in that regard. I think that it's, you know, I sometimes am utterly amazed at some of the things that I've picked up over the decades. I have to say that at one point, I thought someone did me a real disservice when they said this to me, because I was, again, asking all of these questions at the age of 21. And they said to me, you know, you're wise beyond your years. And at the time, I was kind of grateful, thinking, oh, okay, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Kind of stroked my ego a little.
Yeah.
But as I thought more about that, I thought, okay, you're 21 now. You're going to age a year at a time. You're going to get older. Are you going to be, is your mind and your questioning going to keep pace? or are they going to eventually come into balance with one another? Where when you're in your 70s, you're still asking these kinds of questions. Eh, you're an old man, and what do you know? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it, that's one of the problems that I see in Christianity, because the religion doesn't emphasize what Jesus emphasized, which is our need to love and forgive perfectly. And it doesn't emphasize spiritual growth, really. You don't see as much change as you should see in Christians over their lives. I mean, we should see really saintly, you know, older Christians, because they've spent, if you've spent even a few years living these teachings, it does transform your life altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my hope for everyone, when you find the teachings, nothing about the religion, just find those teachings,
right,
and follow them, it does make your life glorious. It changes everything. I can't begin to tell you how amazing and wonderful it is.
If I'm not mistaken, I may be putting a quote in his mouth, but I seem to recall, maybe it was Paul who said this, not Jesus, but I seem to recall true religion, and the word religion was used, was taking care of the orphans and the elderly and the widows. That was defined in the Bible as true religion.
It's Paul, though.
Okay.
Jesus wasn't emphasizing religion.
No,
at
no,
all.
No, not
Jesus
at all.
Was,
no.
He was talking against religion.
Exactly. I mean, look what he did in the temple. Turned over the money changers.
Yeah, and he said, watch out for the teachers of the law. Those are the clergymen.
Yeah.
You know, and all the stuff they're doing, and they devour widows' houses and make lengthy prayers. He was really fed up with clergymen altogether.
Now, maybe people put too much emphasis on this, but I'm curious about your thoughts on the following Jesus' resurrection. Prior to his ascension, Mary Magdalene came to him. She recognized who he was. The apostles did not initially. And he said something to her that really struck me. She was going to reach out and touch him, and he says, no, because I'm not finished. And I kind of jokingly thought, well, I guess the paint wasn't quite dry. But I noticed what was interesting to me was the fact that a woman, and I don't know why the council left it in, a woman was the first person to recognize who he was after his resurrection. Is too much
we
put into that?
No. I mean, wait, when you think about this, with it's a wonder we have anything of value from Jesus, because it was 30 or 40 years, a couple of generations before anything was written down.
Mm-hmm.
And these people who heard him were Iron Age primitives. How did they even understand what he was saying the first time? Then eventually it got written down. He spoke Aramaic. It had to be translated into Greek, and then from Greek into modern languages. So it's so unlikely we have what he said for it all to correspond so beautifully with what people are telling us who died only 100 years ago. That's beyond a miracle. That is unbelievable and wonderful. But the details of what happened after his resurrection, by the way, the reason for his resurrection, there was a reason for it. And I'll tell you what I understand it to be in a minute. But that we have anything from Jesus is a miracle. And thank you, Paul, for packaging it in a religion and keeping it safe for 2,000 years. And now we can finally open your gift. Those teachings are the gift. They're the only reason that the Bible should be preserved at all. But all right, so why did Jesus get crucified and die? And rise from the dead. Just be aware that if Jesus came as a sacrifice, there's no reason for him to have said anything in the Gospels. You'd have a bunch of blank pages. If he was just a sacrifice, he could just stroll around causing trouble until he was crucified, and then it's finished. Then that's all. But that wasn't why he went through a crucifixion. And also he wouldn't have to rise from the dead if all he were doing is redeeming us for our sins. He'd just have to die. I mean, the pigeons don't have to be raised from the dead either.
Right.
But why did he go through that? He went through the crucifixion because he was trying to teach people that their minds are eternal. So he goes through a horrible public execution naked, and then he 3 days later, ta-da! I'm still alive, and so will you be. It was his attempt to teach people that human life is eternal, and that's why he did it. There's no other reason. I mean, there's no satisfactory Christian explanation for why he had to rise from the dead that I've ever seen. But this makes sense. That's why he allowed himself to be crucified, which he didn't have to allow, and that's why he rose from the dead.
I mean, he could have done it in many other ways, but this was the ultimate and most public exhibition.
It was public.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was absolutely stone cold, flat out dead. People have asked me, do I believe that he actually was dead and came back to life? Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Of course. Why not?
Yeah,
why
and
not?
Of course.
Certainly, he could have done it.
Right.
Sure.
Exactly. Very, very interesting. Now, in terms of our modern day world, I mean, you know, we're all looking for answers. We're all asking the questions. We're all frustrated with certain aspects of our lives we'd like to change and so forth. And a lot of people sometimes will use the words of Jesus. Not only as swords, if you will, or clubs, but they'll also try to use them as magic wands to acquire things.
Yeah, that's
now,
horrible.
It goes back. This actually goes back to what you said earlier in the program, that the things that Jesus spoke about had little or nothing to do with the physical world, if I'm understanding correctly.
Well, he certainly didn't emphasize the physical world. I mean, we're here to learn and grow spiritually. He certainly said that over and over again. A lot of his parables were about that. I mean, the parable of the talents, where the fellow who made more money with the talents after when his master was gone, you know, well done, good and faithful servant. The fellow who just was afraid of his master, he buried the money in the ground. You know, get out of my sight, you worthless servant, out into the outer darkness where there will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. That doesn't make sense, actually, to me at one point, but it does now. That's all about spiritual growth.
Yeah.
God has given us this divine nature and the beginning at spiritual growth, but it's our job to make that growth happen.
Yeah.
And if we don't grow spiritually, whatever we think we have will be taken away, and throw that worthless servant out into the outer darkness, which exists, by the way. And Jesus' description of the outer darkness where there will be wailing and gnashing of teeth is pretty clearly exactly what it's like. Dark, smelly, ugly, and we put ourselves there. I've never seen any evidence that anyone was put there by anyone but himself.
And that's in this life.
That's in the next life.
That's in the next life. Okay.
The lowest two afterlife levels are what Jesus said they were, which is really pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And we put ourselves there if we have not sufficiently grown spiritually and we can't forgive ourselves for the things we've done in this life. This is a serious business. I mean, the afterlife is beautiful beyond anything that anyone has ever told you. And we know that because the people who are there tell us about it. But it's not for sissies. I mean, we have got to learn to love and forgive and grow spiritually so that when we get there, we will be able to judge our life as having been, you know, worthy of advancement. We will be our own judge. Jesus says that too.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus says in the Gospels that God never judges us and that Jesus never judges us. Why? Why that's not more significant to Christians, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But he's right.
There is a couple. There are a couple of passages that kind of come to mind. One is where Jesus tells the people that if you have seen me, you have seen the Father. I and my Father are one. Now, that's not literal. That's more of a metaphor, if you will.
I think it's literal.
You think it's literal because
there is evidence that Jesus was God made flesh. There is evidence that God one time entered into a human being and lived on earth, and that was Jesus. There isn't enough time to talk about the evidence now.
Yeah.
But people who are troubled that I'm somehow making Jesus less, oh no. Jesus is much, much greater than any Christian denomination says that he is. He's not just a sacrifice. He's the greatest teacher, and he is God made flesh. Mm-hmm. And People don't understand how important Jesus is in the afterlife levels. They call him the master. I've never seen them call him anything else. And the dead revere Jesus there, which people don't. I mean, even Christians sort of honor Jesus by not talking about him much because, you know, he died for them. What more does he need to do? But he is all over the afterlife. He is doing good works like you cannot imagine there and helping and loving people, and he is revered, which, by the way, is to a lesser extent also true of Buddha. But those are the only two that I've seen much evidence of actively working in the afterlife.
Well, the other passage has to do with Jesus saying, blessed are those who see and believe, but blessed are those who never see and yet still believe. And I think that it's the second line there that refers more to us in the present day in the sense that we don't or can't or won't see Jesus?
I'm lousy at belief. And I think a lot of people are too. I mean, I really am. One of the reasons I've spent my life studying the afterlife is that I wouldn't take just platitudes about it. I wanted to know about it in detail.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out when you learn about the afterlife, you learn about everything because it is a whole science. It teaches us things about ourselves and about what material reality is and just so much more. But it was only when I could put it all together that I came to understand this really is true. People ask me what I believe, and I say, well, to tell you the truth, I'm so bad at belief. I know a lot of things. And those things I accept, but I can't just take somebody's idea and make it something that I'm going to follow. I just want to know what God wants.
Right, right. No, that's the best way to go, I think. I'm kind of curious. I don't want to put you in a box or anything of that nature, but what do you consider yourself today?
Oh, what a good question. Well, I sometimes tell people I'm an originalist Christian. I'm a follower of Jesus when he was alive. Jesus called his movement the Way. And I guess, so someone said, so you're a Wayian. I don't know. I'm a follower of the Way because it works and because that's what Jesus came to teach us. Many of the things which people think came from Jesus did not come from Jesus. He taught us very limited and specific things, and that's what I follow.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I loved Christianity. Oh, my goodness, I still do. But I couldn't remain a Catholic. I used to go to to Mass with my husband, and I loved supporting him that way. But over the altar, in most Catholic churches, there is a life-size, full-color plaster Jesus bleeding on a cross.
Mm-hmm.
And that scares the dickens out of me. And I think it scares everybody, because any God that would want his son to be treated that way is a pretty scary God, don't you think?
Well, the other aspect of it, too, is that to me, and I have never understood it myself, because that doesn't tell me anything other than a man who's been put up on a cross, he's being punished, he's going to die. And it's like the whole point of the story was that he resurrected. That was where the power was, not in the
yes.
death, but in the resurrection.
Yes.
So, but
yes.
how do you represent resurrection? You know what I'm saying?
Well, there are ways to do it. I've seen it done. But the reason that Catholic churches all have this Jesus bleeding on a cross is to make you feel sufficiently guilty.
Oh.
It's all about your guilt. Look what Jesus had to go through for you.
For you, yeah.
But the way I always saw it was, God is scary. Now, remember what Jesus tells us is God's new law. It brought to us 2,000 years ago, being reiterated today. God's law is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Now, fear is the opposite of love. You cannot love what you fear.
Mm-hmm.
And until I stopped going into Catholic churches, I was too scared of God to love the way I needed to love God.
Mm.
You cannot even see your fellow man the way you need to see your fellow man to love everybody. You can't see your fellow man until you've learned to love God perfectly. That really is. Jesus is always right. That is the first rule. So that's what made me, in the end, very reluctantly have to stop being a practicing Christian. I was too afraid when I was practicing Christian.
I can certainly understand that. Yeah, it's... I mean, being born and raised Catholic, I had from my perspective, the privilege of learning more about Catholicism from the Eastern Rite of the Catholic Church through the Byzantine Church. And I used to tell people about it. Oh, it must be Orthodox. I says, no, it's not Orthodox. And it's still under the Pope. That was the one distinction they kept trying to make. And I said, no. But the thing that I have to say that I took away from both experiences was how much, number one, I enjoyed the ceremony, the ritual, the traditions in that respect, in spite of the difficulties I had mentally with the theology, the doctrine, and the dogma. It's. I think each one of us, we have to, if it's serving you and in a positive way, without the fear, then more power to you. Continue on and may you be blessed and move forward. But if it's not serving you, why continue to put yourself through that? And you said, hey, it's just not serving me. I'm getting out of here.
No. I mean, it was very hard for me to do. And I didn't tell myself it was forever. I just said, I'm just going to try not going. But what I found was that to be reading the Gospels and relying only on God opened my heart to God in ways I never had been open before. And I was, of course, practicing the teachings of Jesus, had done that for a couple of years. So I started making so many more strides. And it's a whole other... When my next book comes out, I'll come back and I'll tell you what the process is that I've learned of actual spiritual growth. And it's permanent, and it's amazing how it transforms you and makes you happy.
Mm-hmm.
But I was sort of stymied until I could get away from those horrible depictions of God.
Well, I have to give my mother a great deal of credit, because at the age of 16, I was delivering newspapers. I'd deliver the Sunday morning paper and come home, and I'd get back into bed, and I didn't want to get up at 9 o'clock to go to 10 o'clock Mass. It's just not my thing. And finally, one morning, she comes in and says, okay, time to get ready to go to church. I said, I really don't want to go. And she says, okay. And I was shocked, and it wasn't until I was in my 20s that I finally asked her about that. I says, why did you do that? And she says, because, and this is where she was at the time I asked her the question, she says, because I didn't want you to turn away from the church. Now, I'm not a practicing Catholic anymore, but I've already expressed my love for the ceremony, the ritual, and so forth. But she's not there anymore either. That's not where she is spiritually. The church no longer serves her. But mm-hmm. I don't perceive myself nor my mother as having, quote unquote, left the church. I've heard of so many ex-Catholics for Jesus kind of thing. That's not where I'm at. You know, I mean, I have to say that I take my hat off, literally and figuratively, to the Pope, the present Pope, if in fact what he is doing. I mean, I loved the things that I heard about him on the day that he was announced. He refused to wear the trappings. He says, no, that's not me.
No more shoes. There's a red shoemaker out of a job now.
Yeah, what a shame. You've ruined the economy there. But no, I was just so happy to hear somebody finally starting to, you know, say the things that needed to be said. That we here in the church, throughout the Catholic Church, we should be living the poor life. In essence, I paraphrase. You know. We shouldn't be living opulently. Boy, that upset a whole bunch of people within. But I loved what I was hearing. I just thought, wow, I hope he can make it. You know, I hope he lasts a while.
Yeah.
But again,
what I don't know is what's going to happen to Christianity. My hope is that it will transform itself into the way.
Yeah.
Into following Jesus, because here's what's about to happen. It's already in beta. We're going to have, within the next 5 to 10 years, an easy way to communicate electronically with the afterlife. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to call up Aunt Mildred and get her recipe for Christmas Stolen. And when that happens, it'll be no longer possible for any religion that is not based in the objective truth to survive.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons it's so important to me to get people to see Jesus differently from Christianity is that we don't want them throwing out the baby with the bathwater. We've got to preserve those precious teachings because they truly are of God and they work.
Now, I've still got several questions for you, but this one in particular just nags at me right now. Prayer. Tell me about what role prayer works, how it works, and so forth, as far as Jesus is concerned.
Well, prayer is between you and Spirit, and everyone prays differently. It's very important, I think, to pray from abundance and not lack. So if I'm praying for something, what I do is pray gratitude affirmations. You know, thank you for doing whatever it is I'd like. You know, thank you for giving a sunny day to the children so they'll have a nice picnic, that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, please don't worry, look at the clouds, don't let it rain. Because when you pray from lack, you're saying, I don't have something. When you pray from abundance, you're claiming it. Your mind is very powerful. You can claim it. The way I started doing this work was in April of 2009, and I had sort of satisfied myself about all of this, but I decided it was time to give the rest of my life to God. So sitting in the Unity Church where I still went, I tried to think of what to say. Well, I said, thank you for giving me work to do. Thank you for showing me how to do it.
Mm.
And I thought, that was great. I pray that every day ever since. Within 2 months, I was writing The Fun of Dying. I didn't even know I was going to write a book. Everything that's happened in my life has come from those prayers.
Wow.
So prayer is very powerful. But I pray the Lord's Prayer, and I pray gratitude affirmations. That's all I pray. I mean, repetitive prayer helps some people spiritually, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I would never tell people pray in one way, because it whatever is between you and God, whatever works for you with God is what you should do.
Mm. Wonderful. Liberating Jesus is the title of the book. My guest, Roberta Grimes. And before I wrap up here, I want to thank you so much for taking so much time to share with us again here on the program. It's been great. And I invite you, should you find your way to Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue the conversation. We won't wait necessarily for the new book, but we are looking forward to your new book coming out in a year.
Actually, I'm going to be in Santa Barbara in a couple of months. I was delighted to see that that's where we were going to be talking. What a beautiful, wonderful place it is. What a spiritual place.
Well, then, please, let's make contact to continue this conversation in studio. I'd love to meet you in person.
That would be great. Looking forward to it.
Before we wrap up, three final questions.
Uh-huh.
Who is Roberta Grimes?
oh my goodness, I'm a servant. That's all I am. I mean, I'm trying to help people. I'm trying to be transparent so that people, if they look at me, can look right through me to the Lord and find the Lord in their own hearts and follow this this path, because it's the best possible way to be happy. But I don't think of myself as anything more than that.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
The transformation of the world. I really do. I mean, what was it? John Lennon said, he had a song in which he sang, "We all want to rule the world." What I want to do is transform the world to perfect love, perfect joy. I want to make the kingdom of God on earth, which is what Jesus came to do. I just want to help him do that.
And finally, who inspires you?
The people who inspire me are people you will not have heard of. They're all servants. They're people who are also doing this work and are perfectly selfless in doing it. My friend R. Craig Hogan, who is working on, one of the people working on electronic communication and will not take a penny from anyone, much as we try to help him, and Suzanne Wilson, who is the best possible psychic medium. I went looking like Diogenes with a lantern to try to find one that I didn't think was a crook. She's absolutely 100%. The Zammits, Victor and Wendy Zammit in Sydney, have devoted their lives to helping people understand the truth. Their newsletter, if you go to victorzammit.com, they have a free weekly newsletter, and it is the best news you'll read all week. Those are my heroes. I mean, anyone who is trying sincerely to aid Jesus in getting his work done in the world, that's my hero too.
Again, I thank you so much, Roberta, for joining us on the program.
Thank you. I've had a wonderful time with you. Bless you, sir.
Thank you, and I look forward to, again, having you in studio to continue this conversation. This has been Tell Me Your Story. We've been talking with Roberta Grimes, her author. She is the author of the latest work, Liberating Jesus. And we encourage you to check out her website, robertagrimes.com. That's robertagrimes.com. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.